great to have you guys with us, and welcome to the Valley Outdoors. Good to see you, Ava.
It's good to be seen. I like Don's line. It's good to be seen.
Good to be seen?
If he's not here, who else is going to take over this very serious job?
He can't be seen. It's a problem.
We don't know where he is. He's gone.
No, he's AOL. He's gone.
Or no, AWOL.
A-W-O-L. AOL is a whole different thing.
It is.
Well, we got a lot of fun coming up, guys. We're going to be talking a little bit about propellers and what on your boat can be affected. Can your ride be improved? Can your speed be changed and improved? And what you can do about that. So that and more when we return.
Avid outdoorsmen know that heading to the field without all the advantages, not a good idea. Most importantly, a stable shooting platform. Having the right platform can be critical to success. Field Optics Research is the industry leader, offering the most advanced, lightest, and stable tripods on the market. It's stability you need when that once-in-a-lifetime shot is in your crosshairs. Field Optics, the ultimate tripod for hunting, shooting, long-range precision shooting, spotting scopes, and outdoor photography.
Links to Field Research Optics available on thevalleyoutdoors.com.
Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors radio show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together, we can make a difference.
Hey, Ava. Good to have you hanging.
It's good to have you, too.
I am happy. I'm, like, excited for the show today.
Are you feeling pretty good?
I am. And the reason I am is... We're going to be talking my language today.
He does a good job of explaining things to people that
may not understand.
Yeah, there's a lot of jargon that goes into
propping
props
a boat.
And boats. And
yeah, and this time of year is one of those situations where it's still maybe a little early for most, but it's not too early to say, hey, I've got some funky things going on my boat. I'd like to do this better. And we're going to have some great conversations about that. So stay tuned. You're not going to want to miss it. It's the last, going to be the last segment of the show and be kind of cool. So check that out. It's going to be kind of nice. Now, one of the fun things for me, remember last week I went off and did a rant about.
I remember that. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I told a couple people about it and they were pleased that I did. Since then, you ever heard of something called MinFish?
No.
Okay. Ron Scher is one of the guys involved with it. Babe Winkleman's involved with it. A lot of the top people in the industry that have been involved with the outdoors for many, many years, but Ron Scher being one of those guys, a good friend of mine, good friend of the show. We had happened to be talking, and since Mille Lacs had come out. Now, this is not just about Mille Lacs. This is about how are natural resources being managed across multiple states. I don't care whether it's North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, Wisconsin, it doesn't matter where. This is the headline. Angling advocacy organizations, this is MinFish, calls for the Minnesota DNR to re-examine Lake Mille Lacs data and methodology. The angling advocacy organizations led by Minnesota Fish, which is Sport Fishing Coalition, sent the letter to the DNR commissioner on Tuesday last week, citing their concerns about the walleye regulation for Mille Lacs. The DNR announced that walleye fishing, as we have talked about ad nauseum, said it's going to be catch and release only until mid-August. Mid-August is crazy. It blows me away. Minnesota anglers are well-conditioned by historical variability and highly restricted harvest levels have been placed on Mille Lacs in recent years. Yet, this particular decision and explanation of the data shared by the DNR does not seem to correlate with their experience. And we talked about this because the ice this year was horrible. Nobody got out. businesses were down 90% in the Mille Lacs area. The letter to the DNR noted observations from area guides and resorters that the agency's test netting during increasingly warm water autumns is missing a solid percentage of the lake's walleyes, which is absolutely true. Ron Shera, president of MinFish, said many anglers this past winter observed the opposite of what the DNR is citing in justifying the regulations. The Mille Lacs anglers said he saw well-fed walleye and a plethora of perch and key walleye forage. The DNR maintains that it's seeing skinny walleyes thanks to the part of the low forage base. Mille Lacs regulations that they sent out a news release raised a tremendous number of questions in the mind of anglers. And we as MinFish looked at it and said, whether DNR will do it or not, we think it's our responsibility to ask to take another look. Shera said there's still many unanswered questions about the regulations, and he hopes that the letter will encourage the DNR to step back and re-examine the methodology for 2024. What the DNR stated didn't necessarily go with what perceptions of anglers was, and that's a fair question. He also noted that the observations of the resorters and the agency's test netting in increasingly warm autumns is missing a solid percentage of the lake's walleyes that remain suspended in deeper water into the year. This is exactly what happened, and here's my two cents. 4 years ago, I went to Gull Lake, and I knew what was going to happen, and I knew the transitioning of walleyes to weed walleyes. Across the state, there's transition with cleaner water. What happens? Those fish do not hang where they used to. They do not stay out on the same test net areas that they've been in. I specifically asked, and I'm not going to say who, but the head of the DNR at that time, I said, so, you know, it's odd. The numbers are down. Are you still test netting at the same places? Knowing the zebra mussels that cleaned up the water, knowing that clear water is going to affect those fish. And you know what the answer was?
Yep.
Of course we're testing the same place. We have to. We have to check to make sure that that's going to, you know, that the netting is the same.
Which I get.
No, I don't.
Well, like, I get that they're trying to be consistent, okay, with where they're getting their data. But when the lake changes,
guess
the fish
what?
Are going to move different places.
Yeah. And it's a bunch of crap. And that's what we talked about last week. Let's make excuses. Wisconsin's excuse is what? Global warming. Minnesota's excuse, which is an hour away, is what? Oh, well, the forage base. Well, wait a minute. You're testing it in the worst possible time of the year. You're not checking it in spring when the fish are healthy. They're coming in to putting the feed bag on, and that's what's going on. It's sad. It's dumb. And my thanks to MN Fish. And if you're not a member of MN Fish, sign up. They are an advocacy group for us, the fishermen, and this is the kind of thing that they are going to push, and they will address this, and they will not let up on the pressure. And it's a lot of the top people across the state. Stay on it. Stay focused. Do not lose the eye on the prize. And that's, let's hold people accountable for what they should be doing in the correct way. Stay on that. That's all I got to say. Tell you what, we're going to be right back. We're going to be talking with a very key person in the prop world from PropMD. Brenton is going to be coming on, and you're going to learn more about props than you ever even knew you wanted to ask. Stay tuned. Coming right back. Welcome back, you guys. Thanks for hanging in with us. And we're going to have a lot of fun coming up. Of course, before that, we'd like to have you check us out on thevalleyoutdoors.com. And where else?
Facebook, please.
Yep. Like us, please. We'll be trying to post the shows as this one as well as they come up. And so you have an idea what's going on your Facebook feed. So like us and you'll get the feeds and you'll understand what's happening every week when we jump on board. And speaking of this week, it is no letdown by any means. We are on top of the program. Lots of things going on. The sports show, Minneapolis Sports Show, big event. That's one of the bigger events in the Midwest that just got done. And everybody is thinking about, well, except for the snow we had this last week, they're thinking about, let's put the boat in the water. Mm-hmm. Of course, if you're in Red Wing or any other open river waters where there's walleye fishing out in Pier, probably out there, you're going to be thinking about boating. And did my boat run the way it should the last time I had it out? And what can I do to improve that performance? Everybody wants a little bit more. And joining us today is a friend of mine for, gosh, I don't even remember how many years now, Brenton. It's probably been, what, 10 years at least, probably, I would say?
Close to it, yeah.
Close to it.
About that.
Yep, Brenton is from Prop MD. They have done a ton of work for me and my props. I've always had the edge, which has been nice. For me, having the fast boat on tour was a big thing, and you guys were huge helps when it comes to that. And, man, it was great. People come in and say, I want the Olsen tune, and you guys would have a really good idea on what to do to the prop. And it was a pretty neat deal. But, you know, more basically, you know, we can look at it and take it to the basics, which I guess I'd like to do. You know, props are kind of like the tires on your car, really. I mean, aren't they really kind of, that's what it's about?
That's exactly right. They're exactly just like the tire on your vehicle. And just like the tire on your vehicle, changing your prop can dramatically change how your boat handles, whether it's performance factors like low-end torque and hole shot or top-end, you know, performance factors like speed. But they can also change how smooth of a ride you have, how easily you get up on plane, how well the boat carries itself on the water with a heavy. So whether it's just performance or comfort, the prop has a lot to do with the overall way that the boat performs.
You know, and that's a big thing. I know a lot of people incorrectly assume that the prop that they get from the dealership when they buy the boat, or maybe they bought a used boat, that is the correct propeller for their boat. And that's not always the case, is it?
Yeah, no, I'd say the number one question I get is, what is the correct prop for my boat? And is the prop that I have the correct prop for my boat? And what I always tell people is, there's no such thing as the correct prop for the boat. Only the correct prop for the boater.
Exactly.
You mentioned people getting a used boat, or maybe they inherited a boat. Lots of times the person who owned the boat before you is doing something either entirely different or even just slightly different than you're doing with the boat. And that intended use is a big factor. If the person that owned the boat before you only ever went out by themselves and had, you know, very little gear on them, and their main goal was top-end speed, that's going to be a very different prop that goes on there than if your main goal is to get you and three other people and two coolers in the boat and you're trying to pull a tube in the back.
Exactly.
That's a very different use case and a very different prop.
And to me, the part that really comes up, you know, from myself working with Cheryl Props, that detail when they come to you and say, is my prop right? There's a couple things you need to have, and you need to have, what kind of information do you need to help really select the right propeller or tune the right propeller? What are some key things that you need to know to make that change or make that selection correct?
Great question. So I hope that every person who comes in here can have you know, some general information about their boat. What kind of boat is it? How long is it? Roughly how much does it weigh? What motor do they have on there? So the manufacturer, the horsepower, and the year of that motor. What prop are they currently running? People don't always have this info, but if they can get it or even take a picture of the prop, that's super helpful information to me, because that lets me know where we're starting.
Yep.
And then also what they're getting for wide open throttle, RPMs, and speed.
And this is, and the people don't quite understand it, because the big thing I get is, well, I never run it there, so that doesn't matter. And then I always have to say,
right,
okay,
right.
You know, stop, because this is the reasoning. You have a manufacturer given RPM, you need to run it within if you're going to run it wide open. So you have to be able to get to that point. I could give a person a prop that's, let's say, 25 pitch. Now, I'll do a quick explanation. A 25 pitch prop means if it was in, let's say, a block of Jell-O and I rotated that prop one rotation, it would push that propeller slicing through that Jell-O 25 inches forward. And the problem is, if I give that person a prop that you can only turn at 4,500 RPMs, the engine manufacturer says it should be 52 to 6,000. When it comes to warranty, and this is what's really the basis for this whole conversation, really, when it comes to the warranty part of it, if that computer, because everyone who has a computer, if the computer says, I'm sorry, you never achieved the high RPM you should, you got the wrong RPM, we are going to void your warranty. And they are
exactly right.
And they're completely valid, and they can do that because you're lugging the engine.
Mm-hmm.
You guys
Most
take the time
say,
to
I
do
never
that.
Get there, so it doesn't matter. Well, the first thing is you need to get there. Your engine, for the sake of its health, should be opened up a few times a year.
Yep.
You know, maybe you don't have the family with you when you do it, but you need to open it up. It's just like any other engine; it needs a chance to breathe, and that's just in general. But as you mentioned, the pitch dictates the overall RPMs that the engine's capable of getting. And wide open throttle is the only place that we can accurately measure that. Because throttle cables and linkage, that can all be varying, right? How tight it is or how loose it is.
Correct.
So 75% throttle on one boat might be completely different on another. So wide open throttle is the only place we can get a solid, trustworthy measurement of that. And so that's why we use that. And then if you're lugging the motor at wide open throttle, you're lugging the motor all the way through the throttle.
Absolutely. And of course, what you don't want to do, and this is one of the big things, is if you say, well, I want great fuel economy, I don't care what the top end is, just give me a bigger pitch. Then when you load the boat down, you are not going to be able to get that boat on plane. If it's rough water, it won't plane out. If your live well is full, like everybody's live well is always full with fish and water, right? Always.
Mm-hmm.
You're never going to get.
So,
exactly. That's the goal, right? So you're never going to get that boat to plane out and run correctly. So because a boat, in most cases, with the exception of one situation, you don't have a gear shift. The new 600 Merc has a 2-speed gear shift in
right.
it.
Yep.
But besides that, it's if you go big pitch, it's like you're starting out from a stop sign in fourth gear. If you mm-hmm. go too small, it's like you're going to run down the highway in first gear. So what you want to do is get that good balance. And now the fun part comes in. Do I go aluminum or do I go stainless? There's
yeah.
the next question.
So, exactly. So once you're in that power band, you know, that's what the manufacturers refer to as that range of wide open throttle RPMs where the engine's supposed to be sitting. Once you're in that band, then we can start playing around. Because we know that the engine's performing healthy, which means that we're not worried about engine longevity. And we know that the numbers that we're seeing are more so accurate or representative of the prop that's on there.
Exactly.
And now we can do some changing to fine tune it. When it comes to aluminum versus stainless, I finally kind of dialed this in how best to explain it this year. So I'm glad you're asking. Stainless on its own, just from the material, isn't going to offer you a huge difference in performance. You're going to get a little bit more efficiency out of it, a little bit better grip out of it, because it is more solid than the aluminum prop.
It doesn't flex, exactly.
It doesn't flex, right. We have that idea of flex. But the real difference comes in availability. There are so many more options in stainless steel than there are in aluminum when it comes to blade shape, rake, which is the angle of the blade as it's mounted at the hub, cupping, and all these other factors. There are so many options available in stainless that you're going to be able to find a prop that performs better in stainless than you will in aluminum. Obviously, there are some exclusions from that, some cases where the aluminum prop does just perform better. Usually that's on smaller horsepower applications where the weight of the stainless is actually just a little bit too much for the engine to push it.
And I think,
but generally speaking, go ahead.
No, that's a good point, Brent. And then one of the things that that I've encountered, a lot of you guys out there are going to run tiller engines. You're going to run it, and trolling at low speeds is one of those things that you're going to encounter. And what you find with a stainless prop, because the centripetal force is so great, meaning the weight that's traveling around in a circle, and let's say sub 90 horse motors. 90 horse motors are generally a 3 or 4 cylinder engine, and the slow firing sequence is going to create a chatter, and the chatter can be annoying. And as soon as you go to an aluminum in that particular size engine, you eliminate it because you're not rolling that prop so far forward against that firing of the cylinders and the pistons, and it's not just going conk, 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 and you end up having a smoother transition in the trolling situation. So, but guys that are back trolling, that's one of those key pieces. But that's really also one of the things that comes into play. You still need to make sure that you can get the max performance, even with an aluminum prop, that you can get and still meet those needs in that sub 90 horsepower category. Now, moving to the stainless side, your options obviously are endless. And to talk about pieces and parts, you can talk about tip cup, meaning the how it's rolled up on the tip. That can give you some different benefits to how you want to run your boat. If the bow seems to be buried down in the water, a lot of times tip cup can give you, when you trim or lift the engine, it can give you more lift. Kind of go into that a little bit. Give people an idea how you can change your ride and how wet the boat is or not wet and what you can do.
Yeah, so let's start right where you left us with cup. A prop blade has two edges. It has the trailing edge and the leading edge. The trailing edge, let's start with the leading edge. The leading edge is that outside edge that's cutting through the water first. And then the trailing edge is where it wraps around the tip at the top and then comes back to the hub that trails behind. It kind of makes sense naturally. And where we put that cup can change the type of performance increase we're going to get. So if we add more cup along the length of the trailing edge, we look at that almost as if it's an increase in pitch. And with that, we end up getting more stern lift, so raising the back of the boat up, which is helpful in applications where all the weight is near the rear. So sometimes we'll do that on tiller applications that just need help getting the back of the boat up a little bit more.
Some of the bigger boats that have a lot of weight in the back, maybe an inboard, an IO, that it just lugs, the bow goes way up in the air, that can help you a lot.
Yep, absolutely more applicable on an IO. And then tip cup, so adding cup more to the outside of that trailing edge near the tip, that is more like a change in rake. So rake, as I mentioned before, is that angle at which the blade is mounted at the hub, so kind of how tall or how short your blade is.
Yep.
And adding more rake increases bow lift. So that's what we'll see a lot more on bass boat applications that are just trying to keep that nose up a little bit more, or heck, even pontoon applications, which people don't look at pontoons. They're like, that boat doesn't plane. And they're right, it doesn't plane. But it does need to get the nose up just a little bit so that it can get on top of the water in the same way that any other boat does, and it doesn't have that square front or those pontoons trying to bury itself.
And I think important there, too.
A little bit of lift there can really help.
Yeah, important there, too, is to realize that the pontoon levels have changed so dramatically in the last 10 years. You've got lifting strakes. If you have twin tube pontoons, they've got some things to try and make them run better. But usually in the tri-tune applications, the lifting strakes in a performance mode, 150 and higher, then you're trying to get the bow up a little bit. And why? Because everybody likes to sit in the front of the pontoon. Stop it. I mean, you've got to be able to figure that out, get that nail down, and make that piece and part happen. So really, to sum it up, what you guys are able to do with the information that you get is provide a customer with, hey, this is what my pain points are with my boat. These are the things I don't like. They can call you guys up and say, yep, we can do this. And it doesn't matter where you're at in our listening audience, you guys can say, tell you what, we'll send you a box, put the prop in a box, send it back to you, fix it, and send it back to you. Does that still hold true?
Yeah, we don't send the box, but we do send you a label.
Oh,
so
there you go.
Anywhere you're at in the country, we email you a UPS label. You put the prop in a box of your own, slap that label on there, and drop it off at your local UPS store. It's to us in about 3 days at most, and we can take a look at it firsthand. Obviously, if there's any obvious little dings or some damage, we can take care of that stuff, no problem. But then we can really put our hands along the edge of the prop, feel how much cupping is in there, and know what we're working with to dial your performance in.
That's fantastic.
When someone gives us a call and they're like, hey, this is what I've got, and this is what I'm doing with the boat, and this is what I'm missing. This is what I'm looking for.
You get them dialed in.
We take a look and we get you dialed in.
That's the best.
If we can modify your existing prop, awesome.
Fantastic.
Maybe it's a little bit too different, and we need to make a new recommendation.
Perfect.
But
Brenton,
I'm telling you,
I can't thank you enough for coming on, man. We're out of time, believe it or not. We burned through it like lightning, and you guys can check it out. PropMD, you're going to be in Plymouth, Minnesota. We're going to have your link on our website. Check it out. Check it out on thevalleyoutdoors.com. And can't thank you enough for joining us. Any questions, you can talk to you guys about any prop questions you're ever going to have. And for the Valley Outdoors, I'm Eric Olson. And for Ava, that's a wrap. See you guys next week. Bye-bye.